Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
From the Times and the Sunday Times, this is The Story. I'm Manveen Rana. In a crowded hall, hundreds of soldiers in khaki uniform are singing and dancing. But look a little closer, and these soldiers are unusual. While some have the traditional army buzz cut, many sport beards, and some have ringlets of hair falling out of their berets. As the dancing stops, they're blessed by the rabbi of the battalion. This is the Netzer Yehuda, the only battalion of ultra-Orthodox Jews in the Israeli army. Back in February, they were dancing in that hall to celebrate their 25th anniversary. Just weeks later, joy was replaced by fury, as America was reported to be on the brink of taking an extraordinary step against them.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is reportedly expected to announce sanctions against the IDF Netzach Yehuda battalion, according to a report by Axios. If the sanctions are put in place, it would mark the first time the U.S. government would impose sanctions on an Israeli military unit.
The Netzach Yehuda have a history of human rights abuses against Palestinians in the West Bank. And even the Israeli Defense Forces have accused them of moral failure in the past. But with the threat of sanctions looming, the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, is firmly backing them.
I will fiercely defend the Israeli Defense Forces, our military and fighters. If someone thinks that they can impose sanctions on an IDF unit, I will fight it with all my might.
So what do we know about the battalion at the heart of an international standoff? Who joins the Netzach Yehuda? And why is the issue of ultra-Orthodox Jews in the army so controversial in Israel right now? And with no sign of a ceasefire in Gaza, and America's calls for Israel not to bomb Rafah going, so far, unheeded, is this another sign that the relationship between Israel and its closest ally is at breaking point? The story today: could the US sanction Israel's rogue battalion?
My name is Gabrielle Weiniger. I am a correspondent for The Times based in Israel. I've been covering the now 7-month-long war in Gaza since October the 7th from Israel and the West Bank. And I've been in the Middle East for about 15 years.
Gabrielle, very unusually, a couple of weeks ago, we got an announcement from the Americans. They were singling out one particular battalion, one Israeli battalion, the Netzach Yehuda, who are being sanctioned. Just tell us a bit about this battalion. What are their origins? Why was it founded?
The Netzach Yehuda battalion was founded in 1999 and comprised of maybe 15 to 30 volunteers initially, who come from ultra-Orthodox backgrounds. I'm also going to refer to the ultra-Orthodox as Haredi, which is the local or the Hebrew word for this community. Haredi means to fear God, and they are a very God-fearing group.
And just for clarity, I suppose we should say that people might know Haredi men from their very distinctive appearance. They dress very traditionally, quite often in a white shirt, a black suit, black wide-brimmed hat. You see them all over Israel, and their appearance is just one way in which they hold themselves slightly separately from the rest of Israeli society. Just explain how else they differ.
They are adhere to very strict laws, from diet to dress to daily conduct to how to raise a family. Just every aspect of life is according to these religious laws. They are mainly volunteers. They are not conscripted. So this very small group of Haredis who adhere to these strict laws, for example, they can only be in a male unit. There can be no women around them.
This is because of Haredi belief.
Exactly. They can't mix genders. They can only really be with their female relatives and their wives. They also have to eat special meals on base. So it was a very isolated unit. It was set up as a bit of an experiment, I think, to introduce the Haredis, who don't normally conscript, into the IDF, into the Israeli Defense Forces. And currently, there are over 1,000 soldiers in this unit, but they are all on a voluntary basis. None of them have been officially conscripted.
And tell us a bit about how it works. So you say they're not officially conscripted. How long do they tend to serve? What is it like? How different is it to any other IDF battalion?
I think in some ways it's quite normal. They'll go in at 18 years old, they'll serve for 3 years, and they will do reserves. I spoke to one former member who was very, very early on. He joined in the early 2000s, and he is still in the reserves. He was there until he was around 40. And he was very involved in the IDF. What's unusual about it is that this community, the Haredi ultra-Orthodox community, don't usually go into the IDF. Many Haredis, they don't believe in the standard institutions in the state of Israel, for example, especially the army, which they see as a secular institution. It's anti-religious. There's all kinds of preconceptions.
So what draws these people to fight, to join the army?
Well, in this gentleman's case, he was enamoured with it. He saw soldiers on the streets where he was growing up in Bnei Brak, which is one of the largest Haredi communities in Israel, in central Israel. He wanted to be part of that. He wanted to serve. He wanted to do his part. I think others might have got lost, been unable, for example, to take the normal route that Haredis normally take. Haredi men usually go to yeshiva and they do certain studies. They get married, they have lots of children. There's one track, but there is an element of people who are looking for an outlet for their nationalist and religious ideology, which again is not the mainstream Haredi way because they don't have this nationalist ideology. In fact, many of them are anti-Zionist and don't support the state in any way and think the state should be God-given. But I think some of them are looking for an outlet to express their nationalist and religious identities, and that is a way to do it.
So these are people who are on the fringes of Haredi society, effectively.
I think that's definitely true. I did speak to an expert in Haredi affairs who told me this was the sidelines of the ultra-Orthodox. This is where the ultra-Orthodox way of life and the Jewish way of life meets quite religious nationalist ideology. So when those two are married, it can become quite extreme, and it's a channel for that ideology.
So you have all of these people coming, joining the Israeli Defense Forces, but in this one battalion where they're sort of being kept together. How does the rest of the IDF view them? Do they integrate? Do they mix? Do they work together?
They don't mix at all. They're their own battalion and there'll be no women around, so that already leaves out many of the soldiers who are normally in the IDF. They're seen as quite separate and they're treated separately. So they were stationed for the longest time in the West Bank and solely in the West Bank. They started in the Jordan Valley and then they went on to more Palestinian concentrated areas such as Nablus and Ramallah. And they were the longest serving unit who served in the West Bank. And I think in a way they put them in this outlying area because they are outliers and they didn't conform with the ways and the beliefs and the way of life of Israeli soldiers. And it's just not in their DNA. It wasn't in their lexicon to be a soldier. They were brought up in very isolated and insular communities who didn't see how Israeli life really was. So while the regular and the ordinary Israeli would have a father and a brother, a grandfather who served in the IDF, since the beginning of the state, because the IDF is intrinsically linked with the foundation of the state and credited for its existence, 1948 and the War of Independence, and the way the factions that eventually made up the IDF, the Haganah and the Levy and all of these smaller Jewish battalions, fought off the Arab armies in 1948. Mm. It's become a mythology. They didn't grow up with any of that mythology. They didn't grow up with any of that, oh, my grandfather did this and saved the state. It's not in their history, it's not in their dialogue, and it's not in their culture.
There's been some controversy over the years. They've been accused of treating Palestinians, you know, around the West Bank, the places where they've been sent, treating them very badly in a way that would be against the rules of how the IDF is supposed to engage with them. Tell us a bit about that.
It's difficult because there are many, many units in the IDF and there are many, many accusations against individual soldiers in the IDF. But this unit has had its fair share of controversies. From 2015, for example, a few soldiers were indicted for electrocuting some Palestinian suspects. In 2018, a fight with border police, as the border police were trying to arrest religious settlers for throwing stones. So they got involved there because they were trying to protect their fellow Jewish people in the West Bank. In 2021, they beat and sexually assaulted a Palestinian suspect. In 2019, again, assaulted Bedouin communities. There have been many incidents. When I spoke to one of the soldiers who served there, he told me that a lot of it came from just not understanding the norms of Palestinian society and not being able to interact with Palestinians. They've never come across a Palestinian in their life. They didn't know how to talk to them. They didn't know how to treat them. They saw them as the other. They were placed originally, for example, on checkpoints. And I've crossed many a checkpoint in my time in the Middle East. They don't know how to address civilians. They would address them very rudely. They would, you know, speak to an elderly woman unkindly or a mother in front of her children. And these are also abuses. These are more subtle, but they are certainly violent acts. I think that wasn't doing Israel any favours. And it was this wild west that exists in the West Bank where they felt they were able to enact with some impunity against Palestinian civilians. And all those incidents that I listed, those soldiers were indicted and held to account in some way, whether that was jail for a few months or something like that. But there have certainly been a number of incidents against this unit.
Back in 2022, there was one particular incident that did get quite a lot of attention. Tell us about that.
There was a 78-year-old Palestinian man named Omar Asad. He was arrested during a nightly raid on his village in the northern West Bank. He was taken to an abandoned building by some soldiers. He was allegedly beaten. He was definitely tied and blindfolded, which is quite a common practice for soldiers taking Palestinian suspects to unknown locations and blindfolding them. We've seen it also in Gaza. And he died of a heart attack. The IDF ruled that his heart attack had nothing to do with the soldiers' treatment. That was their initial ruling. The fact is that this was a Palestinian-American citizen and America got involved and it called for a stronger military inquiry. In that inquiry, the IDF did find that there was moral failings, that's a direct quote, or ethical failings. They didn't arrest the soldiers who were involved in that. They did give them some punitive punishment within the army, and they called on two commanders to resign from their post over that incident. Six months later, the Israeli army decided to remove the entire unit from the West Bank. They thought this is too much trouble. And they moved them to the Golan Heights, where they won't be interacting with Palestinian civilians and where they'll be just protecting the border, essentially.
And Gabrielle, just to clarify, this wasn't the first incident they'd been accused of. Was it because this was an American Palestinian that it really cut through?
I think we've seen that before, haven't we? Like a few weeks ago with the strike on the World Central Kitchen workers, the killing of foreign aid workers was the incident which made the Western world sit up and pay attention, but it was certainly not the first time that aid workers in general have been killed. I think it might have been a similar thing there, which made them pay attention.
And is that why America is now thinking of sanctioning this one battalion? And we should say that when we talk about sanctioning in this context, it means that this one unit would receive no military equipment or support from America, as well as the reputational damage that comes with the label of sanctions. But is all of that happening because one of the Palestinians they targeted was also an American citizen?
I think that was the trigger for it. They're basically enacting something called the Leahy Law, which is a 1987 law which prevents the US from funding or training any foreign military units who have been accused of violating human rights or human rights abuses. This is the first time we're seeing them enact something like this, or say they might enact something like this against an Israeli army unit.
And it is very unusual for a battalion within the army of an ally who you provide aid to be sanctioning them. That must have caused quite a stir.
I think it did. We had Benjamin Netanyahu saying this cannot happen and vowing to fight this with all his strength on that very day that the sanctions were reported.
I will fiercely defend the Israeli Defense Forces, our military and fighters. If someone thinks that they can impose sanctions on an IDF unit, I will fight it with all my might.
Yoav Gallant, who's Israel's defense minister, went to visit the battalion to show them a show of strength and show of support and solidarity. I think Israel's very protective of all their units, whether or not this is an outlier unit. It doesn't matter. They will stand for their values and they'll stand for what they say is the most moral army in the world.
It's so unusual for a battalion to be sanctioned like this. What exactly would it mean for them? I mean, how would it play out?
Speaking to soldiers on the ground, they said it won't play out in any meaningful way whatsoever. Their weapons aren't given by America. They aren't trained by America. They have no relations with America. Most of these soldiers are, again, from insular communities from within Israel. But it's affected their morale, for sure. Mm. One of the soldiers told me that it's not very nice. It doesn't feel nice to be singled out.
That feels like an understatement.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel nice to be singled out. And this has hurt their image.
Gabrielle, what was the reaction in the country when they heard that America might be sanctioning an Israeli battalion? What were you hearing from people on the streets or in the media?
I think people weren't super surprised that it was this battalion that was being singled out.
That's interesting.
Yeah. They're also seen as a bit of an easy target. They're quite different from the rest of the IDF. In a way, they're othered by their own society. I think Israel sees them as, even Israel, and not just America, sees them as someone they can say, well, these are the outliers and these are some people we can place blame on for any violations.
At the same time, there is a record there of them having committed abuses, which should be held to account.
There definitely is, but we've seen them be punished in some ways for that and removed from their posts. And maybe the IDF has woken up to the fact that these are not the best people to put in a place which is already so lawless. You know, Israeli settlers are accused of acting with complete impunity against their Palestinian neighbours. And to then add fuel to the fire and add some people who potentially have a more radical religious nationalist way of thinking who seek to conquer the entire West Bank and make it part of Israel, because of course this is land that Palestinians seek as a major part of any future Palestinian state. That's in a fundamental clash, and maybe the IDF realised that this is not appropriate to have people like this who also can't interact with women.
But all of this comes at a time when Israel is about to start conscription in ultra-Orthodox communities. Coming up, we'll look at how this issue has already split Israeli society and how it could even bring down Netanyahu's fractious government. That's in just a moment.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Gabrielle, it's interesting that all these reports of terrible discipline and human rights violations by this ultra-Orthodox unit are just getting attention and international scrutiny at a time when Israel is already very divided over the issue of whether there should be conscription from within these ultra-Orthodox communities, just as there is for the rest of Israeli society. Just tell us a bit more about why this has proved to be so controversial and the background to why Haredi men in the past have been exempt from military service.
So that goes back to the foundation of the state, when the first Prime Minister, David Ben-Gurion, exempted a few hundred ultra-Orthodox members of the community from joining the army. And it's been something that has just been delayed on and on and on and expanded on and on and on. 18-year-old Haredis can say, this year I'm not joining the army, maybe next year. And then next year they'll go back and employ that exemption once more. What's changed is that the High Court has said no more delays. We can't do this anymore. They've made a decision to overrule this exemption and say that the government has to come up with a proposal to draft them. The government haven't been able to do that because it's made up of Israeli hardliners and Israeli religious Haredi ministers. And so there's this kind of deadlock where we're in this moment now where come July, the first group of 18-year-old Haredi youth should not be going to these yeshivas, these religious studies. They should be being conscripted into the army.
There's always been this exemption for what is now a much bigger population within Israel to be exempted from any form of national service. They're now being called up. How does the rest of Israeli society feel if they're still going to try and dodge the draft in a way by saying we're still going to exempt ourselves or we're just not going to turn up?
I think you raise a good point there that this is a much larger population than it was in 1948. In the 1970s, the Haredi community were 2.5% of Israel's Jewish youth that were eligible to join the army. And now it's a quarter of all Jewish Israeli 18-year-olds. So
That's a lot of people being exempted.
It's a lot more, and there's more pressure now to bring them on. Also, of course, the Gaza war and the sacrifice that Israeli mothers feel their sons are making to join the army, this has inflamed tensions. And there is a group called Brothers and Sisters in Arms, and they are doing their absolute utmost to get Haredis conscripted. It's a very secular group. They have very different values from the Haredis. This is two completely opposite ends of society. But I think a lot of Israelis do feel that way, that while their lives in studies are being subsidized and their taxes are paid for those studies.
This is the Haredis, yeah.
Yes, you know, Israeli taxes are going to fund their studies. They don't have to join. They don't have to share that burden. They don't have to give up 2 years for women and 3 years for men of their young lives.
To do national service.
To do national service, exactly. And there is also a proposal that they will extend those years for regular Israelis.
So
and
this
like,
is because Israel is now at war. They need the people who are there. They need more people to fight. So now they're going to extend conscription for the people,
right.
For ordinary people.
That is something that's being proposed.
That must increase tensions. How bad have tensions got? How are the Haredi community reacting to the potential change in the law?
They say that come hell or high water, this is never going to happen.
They want us to be to go to the Israeli army. For that it means to us, they don't want us to be religious. Therefore, we prefer to die and not to go to the army.
When you go to Israel, you really understand how these communities just live in complete bubbles, isolated from one another and very rarely interact. You might see in Jerusalem more than any other place, you'll see Haredis walk past secular people and, of course, past Palestinians. And it's very multicultural in that way, but they all stay in their lanes. So it's quite unusual to see altercations between the two. But we have been seeing that between the brothers in arms and more vocal, hardline elements of Haredi society, led by this rabbi called Rabbi Abraham Menkes, who leads demonstrations to protest the idea of drafting Haredis. He says that this will destroy their way of life. It will put Haredi youth on the wrong path and expose them to things that they work so hard not to be exposed to. They all have kosher phones, which means they don't have internets on their phones. They just don't mix in any way with regular Israelis. So to put them in an ideology or in an institution like the Israel Defense Forces, he feels that it would corrupt them. I think the Haredi community also feel that what they're doing is God's work, and they protect the country with their prayers. And they feel that is equally important.
Do the IDF actually want them, given that they don't mix, given that when you have had one battalion who are allowed to stay within their own battalion and not have to mix with the rest of the army, there have been abuses, there is a record of things going wrong. How much does the IDF want them to be joining en masse?
When I spoke to a member of the Brothers in Arms about this, and I said, can you really imagine all these Haredis joining? This is like the people who only know Torah, only know Jewish scriptures. They know nothing else of the world. So what kind of service would they be? They don't really speak Hebrew necessarily, definitely not English. They speak Yiddish to each other. They don't have the same languages, the same values, the same anything. When I asked the Brothers in Arms about this, he said, well, we don't expect them to go into combat. There's many, many ways to serve in the IDF. For example, many Bedouin members of Israeli society and Arab members of society who choose can do national service, which is some kind of volunteer civil society work or work in ambulances. We do see in Israel the group called Zaka, which is also ultra-Orthodox. You may remember them from October the 7th because they did a lot of work in burying the dead. So there are many ways to incorporate them without having them in a unit.
Given how much tensions are rising within Israel about this issue, how much of a problem is it for Netanyahu and his government? Could this be the thing that actually tears them apart?
There are some analysts who say that this is going to be the issue because this
breaks the government.
It might, because this is where democracy meets the two central pillars of Israel, its democratic nature and its Jewish nature, and these two are clashing here. We've seen two different sides of this in Israel's government. So we've got the Shas and the United Torah Judaism members, two ultra-religious parties, who have called the effort to draft Haredis the mark of Cain. They're like, this is unacceptable. And they've accused the IDF of bullying the Haredi community over this. So that's one part of his government. The other part, for example, Benny Gantz, who's part of the war cabinet at the moment and is seen as quite centrist, he's definitely a military man, he says that this community needs to be conscripted. That being said, I think behind the scenes, the religious elements of the government won't be so quick to leave a good thing. Netanyahu has been there for them for the past few decades, and they think that a government led by someone like Benny Gantz would be a lot worse for them. So I think behind the scenes, there's going to be a lot of wheeling and dealing to find a way to draft a new proposal that will maybe conscript a few more volunteers without making it a blanket call-up.
And talking of wheeling dealing behind the scenes, the relationship between Netanyahu and Joe Biden has seemed very strained during the course of this war. Joe Biden has an election coming up. He's losing a lot of support because he's seen as not having been very strong on Israel. If he doesn't go through with these sanctions after they've been reported, how bad is it for him, particularly at a moment when we're getting so many reports of what sound like war crimes coming out of Gaza? Will people accuse him of not doing as much as he could to control Israel's actions?
It's difficult. Biden's been accused of not doing enough to support Gaza, and I don't think that this is going to be the straw that breaks that camel's back. I think that's already in the air, you know, with the ICJ judgment and South Africa's case accusing Israel of genocide. And there's a lot of wider criticism about American military support of Israel, for example, who just pledged more money to Israel's army. This is a wider issue. This is not the hill that he's going to die on, I think, for Joe Biden.
That was Gabrielle Weiniger, our correspondent on the ground in Israel. You can find all of her work from Israel and more on this story as it develops at thetimes.co.uk with a subscription. The producer today was Chris Wade. The executive producer was Kate Ford. And sound design and theme composition were by Mao Lasseto. If you can, please do leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.